Good morning and welcome to CrossLink Radio, where we talk about health from the eye teeth on down. I'm here to help you understand some of the mysteries of health from the perspective of the oral health care provider. That's me, Shirley Gutkowski. I'm a clinical dental hygienist. I'm in the prevention mode, helping you keep your health at its optimum by bringing you a wide variety of guests with the information that you want to know. And that's what we're going to be doing today on The Sugar Show. It's been a few weeks since we've had a guest here to talk about different sweeteners, which is a little bit more accurate than The Sugar Show, I guess. But The Sugar Show sounds a little bit better. So we're going to be talking today about aspartame, and because it is a sweetener, and it's a pretty popular sweetener, and I found an interesting guest to talk with us about aspartame. His name is Dr. Sam Abraham. He is a highly experienced principal research scientist with particular expertise in the field of microbiology, microchemistry, food safety, and bioprocessing for both pharmaceuticals and food ingredients. He's knowledgeable in carbohydrates, low-calorie artificial sweeteners, proteins, enzymes, antibiotics, proteins, organic acids, and food flavors. Dr. Abraham was external research liaison for Kraft Foods with universities for research projects related to molecular biology and microbial screening, and holds 3 bioprocessing patents. There's no one right now who believes that I spent 6 minutes reading this aloud and rehearsing this introduction. In January of 2005, Dr. Abraham took an early retirement from Kraft Foods and formed his own biotechnology company, providing technical and marketing consultation for new startup biotechnology and food companies. We also have with us today, to help me talk through this whole topic, Dr. Peldiak, who is a retired general dentist from Michigan and kind of a dental sugar expert as well. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Abraham.
Hi, everybody.
And Dr. Peldiak.
Hello, Shirley. Hello, everybody.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so aspartame. So what? This is one of those sweeteners that has been around for a little while, and it has never stopped being controversial. So I'm wondering, Dr. Abraham, can you kind of talk us through what is aspartame?
Yeah, before I will talk aspartame, I'll to give some introduction about zero-calorie sweetener. Zero-calorie sweetener can classify it into 3 categories. Natural sweeteners, which mainly available naturally from plants or from microbial fermentation. Synthetic sweeteners, which is developed by synthetic chemistry. And there is semi-synthetic sweetener, which usually using the natural compound and use synthetic chemistry to create a new compound which is not exist naturally. Aspartame is falling under the category semi-synthetic sweetener. It's made from actually 2 amino acids, L-aspartic acid and L-phenylalanine. And you can see from here, from this, the slide, the green the chemical structure. This is the L-aspartic acid. And the other one, which is the orange one, this already is L-phenylalanine. They connected together with a dipeptide linkage. So it's dipeptide. And they're connected to the phenylalanine. There's methyl compounds to carboxylic acid. So this methyl ester. So aspartame is amino acid, actually is natural. Because right. There is in the world, there is about 20 amino acid exist. Those 20 amino acid, that is the building block for the protein structure. And from this 20 amino acid is aspartic acid and phenylalanine. All amino acid exists in the 2 isomer, L and D. For aspartame, you required L. There is the difference between L and D is they're just configuration of H or H group on the carbon compound. So aspartame is made from L aspartic acid and L phenylalanine and methyl ester.
Okay, we talked about L and D configurations a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Peldiak and I. So this would be the L configuration of this molecule, and that's what we call aspartame, right?
Right. Aspartame was discovered accidentally in 1965 by research scientists working for the drug company GD Searle and Company, which is located in Illinois. While he's working in developing dipeptides as anti-ulcer drug, he discovered that one of the developed dipeptide used to make different multiple dipeptide, discovered one of the dipeptide has a strong sweet taste. This was the dipeptide, which is at the time known by name APM. A stand for aspartame, a P stand for phenylalanine, M stand for methanol, and which is already known by the name aspartame. The company pursued the sweetener direction and filed U.S. patent and various international patents. After many years of toxicity testing and FDA, the FDA approved aspartame use as sweetener in 1981. This company, GD Searle and Company, merged with the joint agriculture company Monsanto, and in 1992 aspartame patent was expired, and now the technology is available for any company to use and manufacture aspartame. I'd like to mention how aspartame is manufactured. As I mentioned, it's already semi-synthetic. That means using natural amino acids, L-phenylalanine and L-aspartic acids for the production of aspartame.
Mm-hmm.
There is two steps. First step is fermentation step. We have to reduce the amino acids by microbial fermentation. For aspartic acids, use bacteria called Bifidobacterium flavus. This produces L-aspartic acids. And for L-phenylalanine, you need Cyanobacterium glutinicum, which is ready for the production of the phenylalanine. Phenylalanine is produced by this organism on the two isomers, D and L. As I mentioned, that we need the L for L isomer, not D. So we, after the fermentation and during the extraction purification, we have to separate the D from the L. There is two methods for separating D from L. One is you can use chemical separation. I don't want to talk about details about just chemical separation, and that you can have the L aspartic acid to use it for production of aspartame. The another method, you can use enzyme separation, and this enzyme can cable to convert the D4 isomer to L isomer, so you have all the production ready in the form of L aspartic acid, and that's more economically using the enzyme separation. After you make these two amino acids, now you have to go to the synthetic step chemical process, trying to make the peptide between the peptide linkage between the aspartic acid and phenylalanine. And also, you have to make the methyl ester, which has already been shown at the end of phenylalanine. So, first step, you have to do methyl esterification. That means, as I mentioned, you have to go down to do use methanol and try to make the methyl ester with the phenylalanine. Then you do the peptide linkage between the methyl ester, phenylalanine, and the aspartic acid to make the dipeptide. After you make the dipeptide, you have to do a recovery process to do purification and isolate the aspartame. That's a summary about exactly how they make the aspartame. So it's semi-synthetic because you're using amino acid, which is natural, and then you do the chemical synthetic to try to develop the aspartame.
That's pretty interesting. I had no idea that there was a fermentation process that came first. I just figured it all came from flasks and bottles and pouring and heating and stuff like that. So there's a fermentation step, and then there's also the enzymes applied to separate the L configuration from the D configuration.
Well, when they discovered the aspartame, at the time there was no any fermentation process for making the amino acid. All he used at the time, back in 1965, he used pure amino acid exists in exact sigma. And this amino acid really is produced from corn protein. That means you use a corn protein, a complete hydrolysis to single amino acids, then you do separation to separate amino as the aspartic acid and phenylalanine from the mixtures. And this this process is very costly and it takes long time. And they found that when they merged with Monsanto developed the fermentation process to making the aspartic acid and phenylalanine very cheap. We can make the end product cheap.
Dr. Peldiak, do you have a question or a comment at this point?
No, I was just thinking that in terms of other sweeteners, are there any, are you aware of any similar dipeptides that occur in nature that have such a sweet taste?
They try to study different peptides, different than aspartic acid and phenylalanine, and they failed. The only one where Shreddy can make the sweet taste was the structure, which I already is aspartic acid and phenylalanine. They tried a lot of amino acids, and they failed. There was no any success. So that's the only two amino acids which, when they link together in the presence of methanol, they have high sweet taste.
Interesting.
Yeah, very. It's interesting to even think that at that small level, and that's what makes this an intense sweetener. Is that fair to say? That
I want to mention about the property, because it's found that about 200 times sweetener than sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Aspartame, you tested separately. You found already it's not exactly identical to sugar. It's sweet, but it does give you the identical taste as the sugar, not as sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, they're trying to mix it with another artificial sweetener to trying to enhance the taste, and also at the same time to make the taste quite similar to the sugar. And they found by mixing aspartame with acesulfame potassium, which is another high sweetener, zero calorie sweeteners, that mix already generating aspartame with high dense sweetener and also has a taste similar to the sugar. So every time you can look in the ingredient, in food ingredient, and you found already aspartame associated with acesulfame potassium.
So that does seem to be the trend, correct? That you blend different sweeteners to get a superior taste profile?
Yeah, usually that's for most of the sweetener exists already in the market, in food product or beverage already. It's not just one sweetener mixture. It's trying to enhance the sweetness and at the same time to trying to improve the taste or mask very bad taste if it exists.
All right, so now we've got it in a container and we're buying it at the store and we're putting it into our drink, and that's how that sweet taste is coming to us through this super intense sweetener, and it's mixed with a carrier, and that makes it measurable, right? Because you couldn't buy like a grain. You wouldn't want to buy a single grain of it. So you put it together with a carrier and you put it into your drink, and then it has this sweet flavor that we all know and love. So what happens after that, once it gets past your tongue?
And that's before I mentioned that, Ian, you have to understand the property of the sweetener and based on the property, you can understand what type of food product or beverage you can use it in as a sweetener. So you have to study the property.
Okay.
For example, how stability of the pH. It is stable at pH. Okay. You know that means the aspartame is pH stable at the pH about 4.3. Mm. And you know that beverage, okay, it has pH about around 3 to 5. So I found that it's suitable for adding for beverage. Because if the pH is neutral, pH 7, that means, for experience, I get back again, that means a pH 4.3, the half-life of this aspartame about 300 days. Okay. That means there is certain time which you can aspartame stable and get the sweetness. And at the pH 4.3, that means about 300 days. Okay.
I never, never, never would have thought of a sweetener having a half-life. That's really interesting. So if you put it into a beverage at the factory, that bottle of beverage, whatever it is, needs to be within a pH of 3 and 5 in order to have a stable shelf life of 300 days. Is that what I heard you say?
The reason for stability, that means if you exceed the 300 days, that means the pH can break down the peptide linkage between aspartic acid and phenylalanine, and you have free amino acid, and then you lose the sweetness.
Oh, and what would those breakdown products be?
Pardon me?
Would the breakdown products be phenylalanine, aspartic acid, and methanol? Or is there something else?
If you're talking about the storage, lifetime is going to break down the peptide, you will have the phenylalanine and aspartic acid. Okay. But if you for digestion in the I'm going to talk about what happened to this chemical structure in the digestion. Okay.
One more question about stability. How about stability to heat?
That's also the studies that they did the studies as stability of heat, and they found it's stable at certain temperature, but if you exceed the temperature, you're using the baking temperature, for example, that can break down the peptide and become aspartic acid and phenylalanine, free amino acid. And that's why that aspartame is not suitable for baking, because baking has high temperature, and this high temperature can break down the positive bond.
So we have a problem both with acid and with high temperature.
Yeah, exactly. You have
over
to
time.
You have to know exactly the pH of the food or beverage products, and you have to know the temperature in your production process to make sure that when you're using aspartame, that means you ready the production process temperature and the pH of the end product is really suitable for aspartame. I want to mention that at pH 7, the half-life of aspartame is about very low. It's about 5 days.
Oh.
So you see, if you're using a product with pH neutral, pH 7, that means you left very poor. You can't use it from that.
I have a friend of mine who likes to put aspartame into a glass of water. She just cannot bear drinking water, but I don't think she saves it. She just pours it in and she pours it down. So.
The pH of the water is almost neutral, so that means it's not. It will be a couple of days if you. If you use it right away, it will be fine. It will be sweet.
Right.
But if you store the water for a couple of days, you lose the sweetness.
You lose the sweetness.
Yeah.
So we've got problems all the way around then. If we have pH too low, pH too high, or too much heat, or storage too long, or perhaps stored outside in the sun for too long a period of time, it's going to break down and it won't be applicant anymore.
This is a problem for every sweetener, and that's why food scientists have to try to work, to make sure that whatever they're using can match, can be suitable for the product they make. Okay. I mean, that's part of the food science, how we can use the sweetener to make sure that and maintain the sweetness and take the long shelf life.
Yeah. I'm like bamboozled here. I had no idea that there would be a shelf life discussion here. So that's pretty interesting to even consider. So, all right. So what happened?
Probably some people in our audience have noticed that the flavor of soda pop is a diet soda pop is not consistent, and that it could be due to the how long it's been sitting on the shelf or where it has been stored, if it's been stored at a higher temperature, and if it's used in carbonated beverages that they might have a very low pH, so it might be subject to breaking down faster.
Mm-hmm.
It will change the overall taste and we will lose sweetness over a period of time. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, that's. I think that's why the food company usually put the shelf life. They have shelf life of each any product to make sure that the consumer when use it, make sure that already he has the taste and the quality when he use the food or beverage. Mm-hmm. So there is label about the half shelf life of the product. And the supermarket or the we have to already if the product already exceeds the half shelf life on the shelf, they have to remove it.
All right. So what happens once you swallow it? Where does it go? Where does it come?
I wanted to mention about the general application of aspartame. Okay. First, I want to do acceptable daily intake. You know what I mean? Acceptable daily intake and how much should be safe to use it per day. How many gram or how many milligram you can use it per day, and the product will be safe for human consumption. The acceptable daily intake, which usually symbol ADI, for aspartame about 33 milligram per kilo body weight. Okay. So you calculate the body weight and multiply it by 33 milligram, then give you exactly how much aspartame the person can consume per day.
Would a normal person ever consume over 33 milligrams because that it's so intense?
33 milligram per kilogram body weight.
Right.
So you have to calculate how many kilo the person when he weighs himself, how many kilo, and based on that you can multiply his weight by 33 milligram. He can give you the exactly amount he can consume per day.
33 milligrams seems like a lot, even for 1 kilo, because you wouldn't need very much, right? How many milligrams are in a little packet?
Oh, that's a good question. I didn't check on that, but already, as I mentioned, 200 times sweeteners and sugar. That means
it's
small amount, yeah.
It's probably a half a milligram in a little packet.
As I mentioned, it's mixture by aspartame and the sisoflame potassium, which is another sweetener.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The application right now is the tabletop sweetener. You know, everybody know that means you already under the trade name Neutra Sweet and Equal. Those two trade names, sweet Neutra Sweet and Equal, those mainly aspartame.
Right.
And also it has a wide variety of application in food, including chewing gums, candy, cold breakfast cereals, beverages, we know that mean all the soda pop, and also desserts. All this already can aspartame can be utilized as low calorie sweetener in these products. But as I mentioned before, it's not suitable for baked goods. Okay.
Right.
Because I mentioned that the heat temperature is already exceeds the stability of the aspartame, and during baking at high temperature, it can break down that peptide linkage and to free two amino acids, aspartic acid and phenylalanine, and that's resulted in losing that. Okay.
Well, we've got about 5 or 6 minutes left in this segment, Dr. Abraham, so I want to make sure that we get to some of the intestines discussion.
That's what I'm going to talk now. Okay. Before I mention that, it was also found that means aspartame can enhance and intensify the flavor of citrus and fruits.
Oh, okay. That's interesting, too. That's good to know.
Yeah, for now, for digestion of this aspartame. Okay. Aspartame is dipeptide. So already, then peptidase enzymes in our body, there is enzyme who can break down protein or peptides. Peptidase enzyme can break down aspartame into free amino acids, L-aspartic acid and L-phenylalanine. And that would be no problem because phenylalanine can and the aspartame can be metabolized by normally will be no problem. Okay, but there is concern about people recovering because they have kind of disease called phenylketonuria, PKU. Those people, they have some kind of disease order with genetic dysfunction. They cannot metabolize the phenylalanine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we break down aspartame. Aspartic acid can be utilize it easy, but these people, they have difficulty in breakdown phenylalanine. And that's result in accumulation in phenylalanine in their blood circulation. And that's very dangerous because if you exceed the limit, that can cause mental retarding. Okay. So usually the people who have this disease, phenylketonuria, PQ, okay, they're not supposed to utilize aspartame in their food or beverage. And the company who's making the manufactured food or beverage, usually they have warning label on right. the to make sure that the people who are suffering from BQ or phenylketonuria, that means not supposed to utilize aspartame. But this problem already, it's scientists researchers try to find figure methods to trying to make sure to block the digestion of aspartame by peptidase enzyme. That means you make sure that this peptide linkage does not break down during digestion. And there is two sweeteners being developed. One developed by Monsanto by a long time ago, what's called the new team. It's just adding side chain to the aspartic acid. And I don't want to make the detail about what side chain, but when they add this side chain ready and by digestion, this side chain inhibits the enzyme, peptidase enzyme, to break down the dipeptide. In that case, there is no any free amino acid that can be consumed for the people suffering with PQ. But the problem, even if it's been approved by FDA, but Monsanto, they never produce in the market for one reason, because the side chains they added to aspartic acid, it has hazard effects on the operator in the manufacturer. So that's why they didn't introduce it in the market, even it's been approved okay. by FDA. There's another sweetener just approved last year in 2014. It's manufactured, it's already developed by a patent and developed by Ajinomoto in Japan. It has quite similar concept, using also the aspartame, but you add side chain to aspartic acid instead of using the chemicals Monsanto use, using vanillin. And the vanillin is okay, that means they found they can manufacture this product without any hazard effect on the operators. And I expect this will be in future will be available, because it just approved the last year and they claim that is safe for the people who are suffering from PQ. And also, but the only problem, the sweetness is about 100 times. Aspartame is sweet is about 200 times. So there is future to try mm-hmm. to use aspartame for the people who are suffering with this disorder disease by making some side chain to that aspartame chemical structure.
Dr. Peldiak, is aspartame one of the sweeteners that were in the news recently about messing up the microbiome in the gut? Is that one of the sweeteners that they were talking about? I wasn't paying too close attention.
Right, exactly. They were talking about both aspartame and sucralose as a possible greater effect on the microbiome than was expected or predicted before. But perhaps we're going to see a lot more follow-up on that soon, and I'd be very interested to find out what the direction of the research, because what we're looking at, for one thing, is a propionate produced in the lower gut that produces a fermentation product of these sweeteners is heavy short-chain fatty acids, which are just based on size, going from higher to lower, butyrate, propionate, acetate, and the propionic acid seems to be a problematic product of the fermentation by these gut bacteria, because it has a profound second messenger effect, and it does pass the blood-brain barrier, and it can have behavior influencing properties. So I think we're going to find out a lot more about that in the future, but this is just scratching the surface. And one more question I have is, you mentioned the problem for PKU patients, but how about also the aspartic acid itself? Well, some say that that is an excitatory amino acid for the brain, for nerve cells. And if you could speak to that, with the buildup of too much aspartic acid, and if that could have a problem for some people.
Yeah, aspartic acid, I didn't read anything that mean can affect, can metabolize easy in digestion. But if you talk about high concentration, as when we talk about aspartame, using very low level because it's high intensity sweetener. So I don't think we'll have any high accumulation of aspartic acid in the blood circulation, which can create any side effect. So
okay,
my reading, and until now nobody care about concern about aspartic acid. I'd be concerned about phenylalanine. And if something new you heard about it, I'm not familiar.
I was just looking at a paper from a review paper by Weissers and Garigua that they mentioned that they call it aspartame poisoning. They use that term about and consider some of these breakdown products to be highly hazardous. But they also said that there could be an advantage of certain brain cells being protected by the higher concentrations of aspartic acid. So they say it could be a double-edged sword, that there could be harmful effects and there could be beneficial effects from some of these breakdown products. But also they mentioned the other breakdown product is methanol, maybe something like 10% of the aspartame broken up ends up as methanol. Can you address that also?
I read about that, and I saw about there is concern about methanol, that means increase the level of methanol in the blood circulation. But again, that means the people who, they mentioned that already consumption of aspartame is very low concentration, that means also the methanol level will be very low than the level which you can cause side effects. So there's a lot, there is a lot of people trying to claim a lot of things against aspartame. Most of these people, they're doing the research using on animal models and using the high dose concentration that's the actual concentration of human consumption.
Okay, one more I'd like to mention is as a possible breakdown product is diketoprazine, which is supposedly fairly toxic. Even in small amounts, and they say that it can be produced in those conditions of poor storage, long storage at high temperatures and low pH, for example, such as in a diet soda that has been left out for a long time. Can you talk to that also?
Yeah, you talk about the finished product. That means the storage proper, the condition for the finished product. And I think that means every product has to be optimal condition for storage. And if that means if already stored improperly, that's already very dangerous for any product. Yeah. So that means that's already something which could be controlled by using proper storage for the finished product.
Quality control, right?
Yeah, everything has to be controlled. I mean, it's not only that in just in production, you have the end product. The product is a supermarket or the they have to that use using the optimum condition for storage to make sure there is no any breakdown of or something metabolite happens and that could cause side effect. I want to mention something. You mentioned about short chain fatty acids. And based on what I'm reading, short chain fatty acid very good in health because it can prevent from colon cancer. For example, butyric acid.
Well, there we go.
And
we have a little plus.
That's what we seem to be learning is that some of these compounds, either the breakdown products or decomposition products, fermentation products of some of these sweeteners, can be important, but we just don't understand all of it yet. For instance, with a tertiary fatty acid, you can't assign a good or bad to them. They have good effects and they have some potentially harmful effects. It depends on the concentration, the timing, and what the ratios are of the different tertiary fatty acids. So that's something that is going to be investigated, and we're going to find a lot more about this in the future. So I think the future research is going to really center on this, how these sweeteners affect the gut microbiome, and we're talking, of course, from our perspective, the oral microbiome, but all the way through the digestive system.
Right, yeah.
Well, great. I think this was a really good discussion, and it got a little technical at the beginning, so I hope everybody was able to hang in there till the end. And aspartame it doesn't have to be as scary as some people make it out to be. It has some good benefits, as Dr. Peldiak pointed out, and some negative benefits or negative actions, I guess. And that's not always horrible. I mean, you have to kind of know what you're eating, right? It's all part of it. So there we have it. Thank you so much, both of you, Dr. Abraham and Dr. Peldiak, for joining me today again on CrossLink Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.